Good morning. This is the Morning Shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. We're live here in the Kia Studios. Mike, Bo, and Tiff here hanging out with you on another rainy, rainy day.
Tiff, are you okay?
Yeah.
Okay. That sounded very downtrodden.
It did.
Yeah.
Do you want me to try again?
No. I just let's talk this out. Does the rain have you downtrodden this morning?
It does not. It has me wanting to crawl back in bed, as I'm sure a lot of people feel the same way.
Yeah, the vibes are out there like that for sure.
It's a good stay at home. Nobody was on the roads. I'm sure a bunch of people called out sick today.
Think so.
I wish my commute was the same as yours then, because all I had was dum-dums trying to either speed up in the rain when I'm going by at a comfortable speed or sit in the fast lane and do like 55. And look, I get it. You need to be safe driving in the rain. I am a big. I have seen wrecks in the rain from people that can't handle the wet roads at the speeds they're trying to drive. And I've been a part of one. My dumb friend on spring break back in 2002. Shout out to Sloan. I'm gonna say something. When you're going when you're in the interstate at like 20 something years old or 19 years old, and you're in a Honda Civic, yeah. and you don't even know
it's raining,
and your buddy goes, "Man, we're making great time," and the next thing you know, you're facing oncoming traffic.
Yeah, no,
you're like, "Oh crap!"
Yeah, no thanks.
But there's no reason to be in the far left lane if you do not want to go at least the speed limit, whether it's raining or not. Just safely get over for the rest of us. Also, if I've gone past you and I'm trying to get over, don't decide you're going to speed up and cut me off with one headlight. Dude with a bicycle in the back of your car on 575.
You tell him.
I'm sure
he's listening on his bicycle right now.
Well, no. He wasn't on a bicycle.
Oh,
he just had it attached to the back of his car. As he had one headlight.
Okay, so maybe he's listening. I don't know.
I don't know. Well, if he is, I hope you got there safely, but don't be an idiot.
Well, look, the good news is we're here to lift those people's spirits that are out there downtrodden because of the rain, and that's the beauty of this show.
Or man. Make them laugh or mad.
Sitting here and uplift on the way to work. Hopefully we can do that with some answers today.
Well, you know, you've got questions. Mike has answers.
That's not quite the case, but man, I'm ready for the rain to end. I told y'all yesterday that I messed up, didn't do my yard work on Monday. Yesterday there was no slot to be able to do that, and it's not going to happen today either, it looks like. So I'm staring at a Thanksgiving trip, where it might not be done.
Well, hire somebody.
It's not going to happen Monday because we'll be golfing.
Yeah, don't forget that. Don't forget brown grass. Shout out, Red Bobber's going to come back and be a part of it this year again.
Oh, nice. Nice, man. Good
told people. You guys, Finley Roofing, Whataburger, all kinds of companies, that I'm blanking on, Twin Peaks.
There you go.
So, you guys will be out there with us, Pets for Vets. You guys know the calls. But you made it safely, Tiff. That's all that matters.
That's what matters, and hopefully everybody out there listening is able to do that as well, man.
This hour brought to you by Morgan & Morgan Injured. Hire Morgan & Morgan, America's largest injury law firm. All right, the college football playoff rankings dropped last night, the latest edition, and I'll give you the top 12. It's Oregon at 1, Ohio State 2, Texas 3, Penn State 4, Indiana at 5, 6 is Notre Dame, 7 Alabama, 8 Miami, 9 Ole Miss, 10 Georgia, 11 Tennessee, and 12 Boise State. And by the way, Boise State is projected to be the number 4 seed.
That's the interesting part of this, right? And we talked about that yesterday a little bit with some of the non-Power 4 conference champions and their path through the field and what the rankings might be. And I don't know, there wasn't many surprises, but I think the posturing amongst some of the votes here is interesting to me. And a lot of people don't realize it, but man, there's always a lot of this when you look on the back end and you start looking at what direction the committee might go. And that starts with me with Texas A&M at 15, and then you move back to South Carolina at 18, and then Missouri for literally no reason at 23. And I'm like looking at that going, okay.
Well, right. Hold on a second now. Doesn't that confuse you that there are one, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight SEC teams in the top 20, yet it's Oregon, Ohio State, Penn State, Indiana is your top five, other than Texas sandwiched in there. And I what I'm saying is the fact that Notre Dame my question is, how are these teams with amazingly weak schedules ahead of all of these SEC teams with two losses? Because Miami, I don't believe, has beat a team in the top 25 all year. In fact, they haven't.
No, they definitely haven't.
And then you would look at Indiana, and who is the top 25 team they've beaten? Because
we talked about it yesterday,
good
man.
Question.
It'd be underdogs to seven SEC teams right now.
Yeah.
But here's the thing about Indiana.
Penn State's not beat one either.
We'll at least get the opportunity this weekend to find out about Indiana. Like, Indiana's going to be held to their feet to the fire, and I think if Indiana loses by double digits, that they're going to tumble out of the 12. I truly believe that.
You believe
that? If
Indiana
loses by 10 or more points to Ohio State, I think they'll tumble out.
So Notre Dame has, what, one win in the top 25 currently?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that was Texas A&M.
Which is no longer – where are they?
They're 15. Yeah. No, that was my point of bringing up A&M and South Carolina and Missouri, because I think there's a lot, and this is coming as a Bama guy, and I think that there's definitely, you know, Ole Miss, Tennessee, Georgia fans that are probably thinking this way as well. I think that when you look at the back end, you see the fact that Missouri, for no reason, was attached to this poll. I think that that's posturing to say that we're going to try to squeeze in maybe a cup. We're going to make that SEC, for the SEC teams, we're going to make their schedule look a little bit more difficult.
Yeah.
Because Missouri's done. I mean, let's be honest, dude. Missouri's done next to nothing.
No, I don't think Missouri deserves to be there.
No, I don't either. But to me, that's posturing from the committee saying, you know what, we're going to make this look a better. Once we do make somebody mad, we're going to try to make it look a little bit better than it is.
It adds to that fact that if Indiana loses that game closely, they could still make the Big Ten title game.
Well, what's going to be frustrating is if do they still have a path? They still have a path to Big Ten title game if they lose that game close.
Yeah, well, let's be honest, with Ohio State being where they're at,
right?
But yeah, they do. I mean, if they were to lose that game extremely closely, and then you know, if any way, shape, and form Ohio State was moved down, yes. But I mean,
won't. I don't know the Big Ten tiebreakers as well as I do the SEC.
And I was told that there was a chance that Ohio State could beat Indiana, and Indiana could, and this was someone that knows the tiebreakers, that could be back in. I don't see it happening with these rankings being the way they do. But yeah, I mean, Penn State could still make it. Oregon is locked in.
I was going to say it's projected one seed,
which
perfect still on the season.
But it's so weird is Oregon gets announced last night at like 4 o'clock, or yesterday afternoon, like 4 o'clock. They say, "Hey, just so you guys know, Oregon is locked in a Big Ten title game."
Oh, great!
But it wasn't announced. It was never announced at any point that they even had a potential clinch. Nothing, but they're locked in. They're 11-0. They're locked in a big. They only have one more game.
I feel like you would assume that anyway, without there being some sort of.
Well, you would assume it, but normally there's a whole hoopla about it on whatever broadcast is happening, or you know, the College Game Day. Oregon, with a win today, Herbie, Oregon will be locked in. You know, because they played Wisconsin, and you would think that. That'd have been something on the broadcast, because it was on, I think, NBC, or Game Day. Well, the win today, Oregon will be locked into the Big Ten title game. Nope, nothing. But they are. They're locked in.
Is Oregon – well, who do they play this week?
They're on the bye week.
Yeah, that's crazy to me that they're on a bye week right now.
Yeah, well, there are a couple of teams that have these late byes. I don't know.
It has to be something with the shuffling with opponents from what would have been the Pac-12 schedule.
If Georgia, well, yeah, it could be. They play Washington to close the season, but I mean, their other bye was in September.
That's crazy.
So
it's weird.
But you look at, let's just look at where this affects this part of the world and the SEC. Georgia wins out, regardless of SEC title game or not. They are in the college football playoff.
Yeah,
there,
they are.
Want to look at the projected matchups? Is that what you're about to do?
Dennis, yeah, second, I was just going to say that I talk about where the SEC is. I think that if Alabama Ole Miss and Georgia all went out, I think they're locked in. Tennessee, to me, would be the one, based on that, that could get left out.
So when you look at the projected first-round matchups, it would be Georgia, 11th-ranked Georgia, or 11-seeded Georgia, at 6, Penn State. You had 12-seed BYU, at 5-seed Ohio State, 10-seed Ole Miss, at 7-seed Indiana, and 9-seed Alabama, at 8-seed Notre Dame. Again, projected first-round matchups.
As a Bama guy, I don't mind that. I'd take Notre Dame. What did you just say for Georgia?
Georgia would beat Penn State at Penn State.
That would be boy, Mike Conte'd have a nice round on that one.
That'd
right?
be a cool atmosphere.
I think a lot of these would. You know, and one of the frustrations for this is, you know, Boise State projected 4-seed. Boise State has no path to host a home game, which I think would be really cool on the Smurf turf out there. And Tiff, you've been out to Boise and seen that atmosphere, and I'm sure it's pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, they this season, and then again getting Jenty and getting the Heisman CD, like, it's basically just Broncos mania out there for how they've played this season.
Yeah, so.
Imagine this. Ohio State, in the projections in the games, would be the 5-seed. They'd get to play BYU at home in Columbus, and then they would go on the road to play Boise State. I mean, that's pretty much – I'm not trying to demean teams, but on paper, Ohio State should win both of those matchups easily, and not
Ohio State on paper will be three. There'll be three score favorites in those games.
And then you look at the Georgia route to the semis. That have to play at Penn State and at Miami. That's a much tougher route to make to the playoff. For a team that has played the hardest schedule in the country, you tell me. Now, look, I'm not going to sit here and make the argument about what's fair and what's not, but you tell me that's fair.
Yeah, it's tough. It's tough for sure.
I mean, what's the point of playing a tough schedule? Because you know what, even the college football playoff is not. Now you got one more loss in Ohio State, but I don't know, man. This doesn't feel right to me.
So what are three things you'd like to see change or improve on the Falcons' defense ahead of their matchup? Actually, they're on a bye week, but what would you like to see them correct during this bye week before they get back at it the following week? So the guys are going to weigh in on that. Improvements, changes, we've got them just ahead on the Morning Shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Back here on the Morning Shift, this hour brought to you by Morgan & Morgan. Injured, hire Morgan & Morgan, America's largest injury law firm. All right, the Falcons on a bye week, and we had a lot of discussions about what this team needs to take care of during the bye. We heard from Kirk Cousins this week. We also heard from Coach Raheem Morris talking a lot about the scheme. But these guys were kind of trying to scheme up, specifically looking at the defense and what can they improve upon. And what needs to change ahead of their next game?
Yeah, Tiff, and I think it's easy to look at the Falcons and say, "Well, got to rush the passer. Got to cover better. Yeah, got to get off the field on third down." I think those are the easier things. I don't think that's what we want to talk about so much. It's kind of digging into how they can do that, I guess.
Oh, you don't want to be like, "Well, just win your 101s."
Yeah, win your 101.
Back to the basics.
Hey, here you go. How about this one? Do your job. You know what I mean? Do your job.
Problem solved.
Yeah.
There's nothing better than tuning in a guy and say, "Do your job." And it's like, what is that guy's job? Oh, I don't know.
Well, okay. The worst, and look, I'm not saying that I've never done this. It's probably happened before. But I think there's too many people right now in the Falcons fan kingdom that are trying to oversimplify this. It's a Jimmy Lake problem. It's a Kirk Cousins problem. It's a Matthew Judon problem. It's all their freaking problem.
You mean the old scheme versus talent
oversimplify it. Well, if you wouldn't have done this, you could have done this. If they get rid of the whole thing about Jimmy Lake, and I know that we're going to talk about it, is, and I told you this morning, it's oversimplifying it to say that Jimmy Lake needs to be fired or Jimmy Lake needs to change his scheme. Raheem Morris is a defensive guy. He hired Jimmy Lake because Jimmy Lake knows his system. Like Raheem Morris is signing off on everything that Jimmy Lake is doing.
Well, yeah, I believe that Raheem's in. Do you think Raheem's in those meetings?
Yeah.
Yeah,
they're in lockstep.
I do as well. And look, This kind of leads me into my first or one of my things that I think, and I don't, and that's the conversation that we're going to have is how they do a better job and how they fix this. But everything about this scheme and what's happening with pass rush and not is is predicated on situations, right? So, in other words, this team is, I don't want to say historically, but this team is pretty bad on first down on defense. And what I'm saying is like, when you run against this defense, you're averaging just a shade under 5 yards a carry. 5 yards a carry. Yes. So, if you're averaging 5 yards a carry on first down against this defense, that means there's a lot of second and mediums, which turn into what? Third and shorts normally.
Well, I was going to say what they turn into for a lot of teams, what they turn into is explosives, because you know that you can probably go get that yardage. You know what I mean? If you can take a shot, like if you're third and, I mean, if you're second and three, right, and you've gained 7 yards on first down, you're going to take shots. You're going to take shots. Yeah. And then take risks.
You know what else? You know, and that those are first downs from 6 to 10 yard range, which means, you know, not like a first and five penalty or whatever. Like if the defense jumps off, but then in the passing defense on first down, they're averaging almost 8.5 yards a down giving up. Now that is also, and they've also given up 47 first downs. So this team is really bad on first down, and what my point in all of this is that teams are having such success that it takes them two downs to get another first down, and it's not hard. It also leads to second and third and shorts, and you're just not going to generate pass rush on second and third and shorts. I mean, you're just not. You're not going to – those aren't necessarily passing situations.
Yeah. They're definitely not, and I think that leads into the further conversation. And I want to give credit. I noticed this, but I want to give credit to Mark Zeno because he tweeted it out yesterday. But I noticed this, Sunday, I think, when I was looking at some numbers. The Falcons are bad in a lot of statistical categories. They're dead last in the NFL in two. That's sack percentage, and it's 2.5. That's what their sack percentage is. And if you look this past weekend, they didn't get a pressure until inside the two-minute warning in the first half. And I believe it was their only pressure from the starting four the entire day. All right. And then you go back to that and you try to marry these numbers up, right? And I think that's what you're trying to do. You go back to opponent's completion percentage. This is what Zeno tweeted out yesterday. Dead last in opponent completion percentage at almost 72%. So that's your opponent is not being affected at the quarterback position right now. And it doesn't matter how you want to slice it up or how you want to say what should change. They are simply dropping back, taking easy throws, and getting chunk yardage on first and second down, and then completing the third downs.
But you're giving them easy throws. I mean, you go back and watch all of these games, and the one consistent is that quarterbacks who are a young and coach well, which I think Bo Nix is one that falls in that category,
sure,
or B, a savvy veteran that understands what it means to take, after you watch this team on film, that, hey, if I just take what they're giving me, we'll move the ball and possess it. This is my biggest issue with everything, is that you're so bad in the run defense and you're playing so far off in the pass defense that you're not even getting in, you're getting in very few traditional pin your ears back and go after the quarterback situations.
So my question is, if you take away the last two games, then what does it at least say about this team that despite the issues you guys are pointing out, that they've still been able to win games?
Well, I think it's too reliant on the offense, right? I think when you look at, let's just take the Tampa game in Mercedes-Benz. What was that, week 4? The game where you win on the, in overtime. You kick the field goal, you spike it with 1 second left, and by the way, ding, you were a referee's hand away from losing that game. But I think when you look at that scenario, you relied on Kirk Cousins to throw for 500 because Baker Mayfield was picking you apart, right? And a lot of times, Tiff, in my opinion, when you run a defense like this, you are counting on turnovers, right? And you're counting on your offense outscoring, and basically you're playing not between the 20s. You're playing for the red zone. to shrink the field so that your bumpers off of these wide receivers get shrunk down. The problem, and I'll push back a little bit, Bo, the problem with what you're saying about hugging up on receivers, and I agree with you to an extent, but I think it has to be different. I think you have to mix it up, because if you're going to hug up, you're going to see some of the rub routes, and with your pass rush being so abysmally bad, when you start seeing rub routes, wheel routes, combinations down the field, you're not going to be able to cover those guys deep if the quarterback's not getting touched for 5 seconds.
Well, that's a very good point, but here's the reality. Those are low percentage throws down the field.
Sure.
Okay?
Yep.
So when, you know, 70-something percent is the completion rate against us, that's because everything is 7 yards or closer, essentially.
Yep.
And so I'm willing to take my chances with maybe somebody falling into the sack, or maybe moving the quarterback off his spot after so long, or making him move up in the pocket, and maybe Grady or Onyemata or Street or somebody kind of stonewalls their guy, and so you can't move in the pocket as well.
Yeah.
And having the quarterback throw downfield in a low percentage throw, much more than a dump off or just a quick out or whatever, than that, because now at least they're the percentage is against me. But the reality is you're allowing yourself to get paper cut down the field for the tune at a 15-play, 7-minute drive, and now you're losing possessions when you do that, because that's shortening the game, and it's also putting extreme pressure on your offense that when they do possess the ball, that they score. And it's not realistic, because what teams are doing now is I think my biggest issue is I'm watching teams adjust to how we play, and I don't see us adjusting to that.
Well, and I think one of my three things that I brought to the table for this entire discussion was we have to do a better job disguising and mixing up. It's frustrating when we're just two guys that sit at a desk with a microphone, can almost look at it and know exactly what we're about to run defensively. There's no disguise to it. The only disguise we utilize is when you get in some of these passing downs that you walk up a Caden Ellis or Nate Lamb in an A-gap or on the edge, and then they bail or they run a twist on. Like, the coverage in the back end's not disguised very well. And it's a simple safety rotation, and you're going into cover three with the pattern matching underneath. It is not hard for Sean Payton to go in and pick apart a defense like that. It's just not. Like, the guy's seen a million different defenses. And while Bo Nix might be a rookie, the guy in his ear is definitely not. And I think that's the outcome we saw on Sunday, is that there is no change up when it comes to these coverages and the things they're trying to do.
And the problem is when you lose guys like you have, because there's no doubt injuries is one of the reasons we were winning games earlier is we were healthy. And we had our best players on the field, and they're able to do the things that you want them to do. They're able to come up and make the sure tackle, right? They're instinctually better. They're better players. Part of what makes them better players, not necessarily athletic size or speed or skill, it's the instinctual
willingness
play.
Is what it
like,
is.
And so when you got a guy that has less playing time, he's not as instinctual, he's not as experienced, then playing like this and not even adjusting it takes away. You look worse. And some of these guys have made plays. Mike Hughes has made plays because he's a veteran. He knows what's coming. And when you take that away, it hurts you even more. And I think that's what we saw, to me, Sunday in Denver.
I was just Googling instinction because I wanted to make sure.
You know, words are hard sometimes for me. I do the best I can with with my limited capacity.
All right, when we come back here, what does the latest college football playoff rankings mean for some teams this weekend? Implications? Big implications for some of these teams, just like big words. We'll be right back here on The Morning Shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. The latest college football playoff rankings dropped last night. I'll run through them for you. Through the top 12, you have 1 Oregon, 2 Ohio State, 3 Texas, 4 Penn State, 5 Indiana, 6 Notre Dame, 7 Alabama, 8 Miami, 9 Ole Miss, 10 Georgia, Tennessee at 11, and Boise State at 12.
Mm. Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you had a question.
Did I end in an inflection?
Okay. Yeah. Sorry.
Your instinction was wrong.
Yeah, my instinction was wrong. No, you know what's funny, and I'll ask you guys this. Is there a path I've been seeing a lot of this, a lot of these questions pop up in the old social timeline. Is there a path for Georgia to host in round one? Is there a path for that? Because that's what I've been trying to, you know, it's like the old GIF with the, you know, the algorithms going around and around your head, and you're looking at it going, okay, how could that happen? Been trying to break it down.
Do you mean after this weekend? Because the projections don't have them hosting. The projection, at least, for the
matchups. No, I mean in the end. Because, look, right now Bama's hosting. Bama can't host a playoff game. It's impossible. Like, Bama either has to win out and they'd be the SEC champion, or they lose and they're probably out of the playoff.
Based on the projection, because what would happen is BYU, being a conference champion, would jump up, right?
Yeah.
They would jump from... From what are they? 14. They would jump from 14 to 12, right? So, in order for that to happen, Notre Dame would need to lose and Georgia would need to win out, and Indiana would need to lose as well, right?
Right.
Because the teams ahead of Georgia are Ole Miss, Notre Dame. Now, even then, Ole Miss would then host a home game. So I'm thinking maybe,
most of the things.
Ohio State could, if Ohio State loses again, too. Now that, see, here's the conundrum for me is if Ohio State loses again, they could also bump down. So Georgia could perceivably move up maybe to 8, right?
Right.
And not go, if they don't go to the SEC title game, they could be kind of locked in at 8 and they could host a home game. What does the committee do with Ohio State if they lose in the Big Ten title game? Sorry, yeah. To Oregon again.
So, and that's a good question. But coming up at least, Indiana this weekend, and then on Saturday on the 30th they get Michigan.
Yeah, I honestly don't think they'll have a problem with either one of those teams. Michigan is a shell of what they've been.
I was just thinking, because of the rivalry and the history between those two teams.
I agree.
That
I feel
you never know what can happen.
It's a good point.
It's a great point because I think everybody sitting here understands rivalry games. You never know. Like, Florida's going to be favored over Florida State. You never know.
Yeah, right? Well, that one, yeah.
Alabama will be favored over Auburn. Yeah, never know.
This Michigan team, though, is – I think they're good enough defensively to keep it close, but Ohio State, Ryan Day should be fired on the spot if they lose that game. I'm just gonna go ahead and say it. You can't have a $20 million team.
That's tough.
No, you can't. You can't go say I need $20 million for players.
And
get it
also,
and
this
lose
is
your
the
rival.
Game. This is the game. It's like the game for Ohio State, right? And it's kind of always been the monkey on the back, so to speak, for Ohio State. So if you come out and you lose, I am never lobbying for anyone to get fired, just to put that out there. But I am saying if you come out and lose to this state
you're
of
saying
Michigan team,
might be a little more understandable.
It might, you know.
My issue with what both of y'all are saying is that if your only two losses are to your rival and the number one team in the country, I would have a hard time.
Let me put it this way.
I don't think he would be let go, but I'm just saying it wouldn't sit well considering the state that this Michigan program is currently in.
You have a guy who there's a lot of the fan base, including some of the money guys, aren't happy with. He stands up at a podium and says, in order for us to win a national title and to beat Michigan, we need around $20 million for an NIL. For NIL money.
Just coming up with the scenario in your head.
No, that's what happened.
How do you know it wasn't the flip side? You know what I mean? Like
Mike, stop. Right. I'm not a fire the coach guy. You know that about me. This guy stood up there after losing the fourth straight year to Michigan and said, we need $20 million to be serious as a title contender in the new college football. He gets the money, they go get a bunch of players. And then you're telling me you lose at home, to a 5-5 Michigan, or maybe a 5-6 team at the time, Michigan team.
Right.
Dude, that is there is no coming back from that for Ryan Day. I'm sorry. That's the reality of the situation.
I'm getting vibes of Mark Zeno sitting in here during the World Series and telling me the Yankees need to fire Aaron Boone.
That's completely different.
That's what it feels
like. It's completely different.
It's like, dude, you're playing in the World Series. You're the number two ranked team in the country right now. Well, the only person you've lost to is Oregon. And you're telling me they lose one more game to the right team, he's done?
It's the wrong team.
Well, the right team in this scenario.
No, it's the wrong team. That would be what is fifth straight loss. All right, you know what? You don't believe me?
I'm not saying it won't happen. No, no. I'm saying it's wrong if it does.
John Cooper was literally fired for almost the exact same thing, just a different era of college football.
I think it's wrong that it happened back then, too.
Really? Because it got him a national title 2 years later.
I think it's ridiculous.
It got him a national title 2 years later.
Who do you think you're going to bring in at Ohio State that's going to be some whisperer?
I'm telling you something. You would have Ohio State's one of the jobs. It's not Ole Miss, guys. It's a job that if you fire the coach, there is about 99% of the head coaches in college football today will line up to do.
I just think there has to be more value placed on consistency.
I disagree.
Agree with you, but I'm saying that program, and I've covered them on three different occasions. There is a lot of pressure, and I'm not saying it's any more pressure.
I understand there is.
There's a lot of pressure on the head coach of that team.
I understand that there is. I'm saying it shouldn't be.
That's my point.
Don't mistake the reality, which is what I'm putting out, as for what I think the way it should be. I do believe in consistency. I would kill to go 10-2 every year at Florida right now, or at Kennesaw State, either one.
I was going to.
In D1.
It drives me nuts. It drives me nuts.
But Tiff's right. The reality of that is that what that is there.
Here's the end game of what we're all talking about is I agree with both of you. I just think it's wrong. And I think we're all arriving at the same spot. There needs to be more value placed on consistency at these programs, because guess what? You move on from a guy, and there's a couple of case studies about this. All of a sudden, you move on from a guy, and all of a sudden, you move some pieces around. Now, it's NIL era, and it's different. But then all of a sudden, you wind up scratching and clawing, and this is not a shot, but at a place like Florida, where they've gone through, what, four head coaches since Urban Meyer? And now it's like, dude, when can we get back to the place we were back when that was happening? Not that they fired Urban Meyer, but my point being is that you
this
can find yourself
coach,
in that downward tailspin in a hurry.
And I go back to the talent they had. Like, I had that Rose Bowl game where they beat Utah, but you had C.J. Stroud as your quarterback. You had Jackson Smith and Jigba, one of your great receivers. You also had Marvin Harrison Jr., who was on the
stud
coming up the ranks at that time. But you had a wealth of talent, and you were in the Rose Bowl. You weren't playing for the national championship. So, I don't know. But those are just my two cents on just
– I agree with you.
You know, when you look back at the caliber player this program has had. When we come back here on the morning shift, improvements, changes to the Falcons' defense, we will weigh in on what needs to happen over the bye. Stay with us here. This hour brought to you by Morgan & Morgan Injured. Hire Morgan & Morgan, America's largest injury law firm. We'll be right back here on the morning shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. We're in our 7 o'clock hour. It is brought to you by Zero Res, smart, lasting, clean. So you're not going to get any yard work done. That's unfortunate for you.
I don't know if it is or it isn't, Tiff. It's a good excuse, though. I think a lot of people this time of year kind of push it off, right? I mean, got to rake leaves and do all the other stuff. And
you just save that for the weekend?
No, because I get side eye from my wife, because she's like, you were home without kids for a number of hours this week and you didn't do this, and yet you chose when we were all home with the kids to do this, and now she would be on kid duty while I was raking the leaves. So it's just not going to happen. I'd be getting all sorts of ugly looks.
Just take them out there and let them play in the leaves while you rake them.
Well, that's the best case scenario, yes, for sure. But how long will they be entertained by that? Would be the question. Yeah, I'm with you, though. That's definitely the best case.
There's a new thing. It's probably not that new, but I saw something on the interwebs.
Breaking news.
About leaving the leaves. That it's good for the ecosystem.
You're creating
less, like, waste for the, your waste management company to come out. So you leave the leaves because apparently it's good for bees. I don't understand that concept yet. Maybe they sleep under the leaves and stay warm. I have no idea. But there's other bugs that then will eat the leaves. So it's actually a good thing. I think it's part of that whole, like, leave your lawn alone stuff where you see people just letting
That's just not going to happen in my good old-fashioned Zoetia.
Don't you have neighbors that do that? Didn't you say you were
I do, yeah. My direct neighbor does not believe in grass. Yeah. I have a direct neighbor that does not believe in grass.
What do you mean, they don't cut it?
No, they don't believe, they don't have it.
Oh,
well,
okay,
how do you not
them.
Believe in something that's tangible?
I mean the
tangible.
People that have grass, but they let it just grow wild.
They don't believe in having grass.
But
they
I'm saying, I thought you had, okay, you don't have someone that lets their lawn grow wild.
So, they use clover instead. I'm sorry. I wasn't clear on that.
Okay, I was
clover.
Like, artificial.
I need to know the reasoning behind this.
It's better for the ecosystem.
Upkeep, you don't have chemicals, you don't have to water it, you know.
But grass is natural thing. Like, I understand not water.
The
like,
upkeep
not,
is not, though.
Not when you put fertilizer, like all that extra stuff to make it green.
But they got weed, like crabgrass and Johnson grass doesn't need anything to grow. It just needs, you know,
sure. And
the
I'm
earth.
Sure if that was in their front yard, they'd let it go too.
So you don't have like clover. An HOA that is all over that?
We have an HOA, but it's not, it's the best version of HOA.
Oh,
it's not overbearing.
Good. Okay.
But they will, you know, if you park a fifth wheel camper in your front yard, they'll be like, hey man, got to move that.
All right.
Unless you use it as the guise of the ecosystem, I guess, like these people do. I mean, that's some hippie stuff right there. I don't know. That's odd.
It doesn't bother me, man. They keep their yard tidy.
Yeah.
And so
okay.
That's good.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah. So
I need to blow.
Cool. I don't mind the clover.
I need to straight up blow my leaves. But see, I've got a natural backyard. Like, there's no grass, nothing. It's just there's too many trees to grow anything back there. And also the way the elevation is, if I was to take the trees out, then I would have mudslides. Not like a huge one, but like a little bit, you know, when it rains. Like
So a lot of runoff.
It's either spend $70,000 to $80,000 on cutting all the trees down and landscaping or just leave up the nice kind of backyard that I'll have that with nothing. So I just blow the leaves in the backyard, which I need to do. Badly.
NFL teams need like their own version of HOA. Maybe at HOA.
Well, that's kangaroo court, right?
The Falcons defense?
That'd be great. Yeah. Hold them accountable. Yeah.
I don't know. There might be a lot of fines.
I might get a nasty letter in the mail for a couple of those.
You guys wanted to talk about just the changes and improvements that this team might need to make over the course of their bye week. So maybe an HOA, maybe you need to send them a letter.
Yeah, maybe, can you make some changes? Not to your property, but to the way you do things. Look, in all seriousness, we were talking earlier about some of the changes you want to see. And this is kind of an open-ended topic, right, guys? Because it's like personnel, substitutions, schematics, blitzes, disguises, you know, change-ups, things like that. And, you know, I know we'll probably do more of this in the offense tomorrow, but I continue to kind of dig in to the numbers. And one of the interesting things on a positive side I've kind of found here when you look at the season numbers is the amount of passes thrown by the opponents per game at 34.3. That's 27th in the NFL. But your opponent's yards per pass right now still sitting at number 11 in the NFL at 6.9. So when you start to stack those numbers up, becomes a little bit more understanding of what they're trying to get done. They won the underneath throws. We've talked about it all year, right? Give a big bumper, allow the underneath throws, and make sure it tackles. And the way that it seems like more and more that opponents have started to attack that is, hey, you're going to give us a big buffer. To Bo's point, you know, 30 minutes ago, we're going to run screens, and we're going to run kickout blocks, and we're going to put a big guard, the guy with the dreadhead right guard for Denver this past weekend. Kick out blocks on a number of linebackers, corners, and everything else because you have that big cushion and because you're allowing those throws at or behind the line of scrimmage for this Falcons defense. So frustrating, I guess, to say the least, and especially when it doesn't work and when your offense can't keep pace. But it's a little more clear to me, you know, looking at those numbers, what this defense is trying to at least accomplish.
Yeah, you got to put some respect on Quinn Miner's name, by the way. You
know? Look, dude.
One of the better offensive.
I will. You know me.
No, I know. I respect him
all day. He's a unique looking fellow, but man, he can block.
You know, and I think the problem of this defense has been magnified the last few weeks with the injuries too. You know, the last 2 weeks you've lost Mike Hughes and for essentially what has been two games, you know, seven quarters, I guess, something like that. And then you've had D. Alford, you've missed him for a little over a game as well, right? And what, you know, to me, when you allow, you know, D. Alford has been phenomenal this year. So is Mike Hughes at reading screens.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And Ben
triggering, sticking
decisive.
A foot in the ground. Yep.
Instinctual, and decisive and knifing through and making tackles. And when you play this stuff of stuff and you don't have guys that are experienced out there, now you're compounding the issue with, and you're giving guys like Quinn Miners 7-8 yards. They're able to get out there and create a wall. And on the flip side, you're not doing that when you run screens. And I know we'll get to that tomorrow because I know that's something that's high on your list of how to change it. So I guess what I'm saying is that when you are down, guys, I know you want to keep everything in front of you, but it ain't worked the last 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And no, that's not right. That's not fair. It did work in the second half of the game against the Saints. The first half, you were sleepy and you let guys get behind you. Let's just talk about the Denver game. It didn't work. And Sean Payton is an elite play caller and he's elite game day coach when it's talking about making adjustments. You know, I cannot like him and say that. Oh, I ran into him, by the way, Ding.
Ding.
Tiff, yeah, we're walking through. I know you weren't here Monday.
Physically ran into him.
We're almost. He yielded to me.
What?
You go ahead.
Who yielded to you?
Sean Payton.
I just wanted you to say that.
He yielded to me because he knew what was good for him.
I don't even think you believe that.
No, but he was actually polite in yielding. But the reality situation, Derek, he's gonna watch this on film, pick you apart, and he's the type of coach that if he already gets ahead of you and you do adjust, he's good enough to adjust as to your adjustment. And when you're already behind the eight ball, you know, a couple of scores, 15 points at halftime, that's going to be a long day.
I completely agree with everything you're saying, but if you'll allow me for just a second, because
no.
I want to see
yes,
what
okay.
your rebuttal is. Allow me to be devil's advocate, and I'll play the role of Jimmy Lake. If Jimmy Lake were to walk in here right now and he'd say, hey, you know, we really wanted to adjust to what they were, the way they were attacking us, but with our third string nickel in the game and Kevin King getting knocked out on play number 4 and having to play Richie Grant, those guys are all playing out of position, and sometimes it's difficult to make those adjustments right there in the second quarter, and we wanted to get to halftime before we could make the proper adjustments.
Excuse
now,
me,
ahead. Now,
Mr. Lake?
Yes.
Because you're playing Jimmy Lake right now, and
yeah.
I'm fan.
Yeah.
I'm angry fan number three.
Correct.
Why the hell was Richie Grant the guy that decided a safety that you put in nickel anyways when you were placing? I mean, I don't even know. You got Natron Brooks on the sideline over there, Coach. Why would you go to Richie Grant?
Well,
like, what's up with that?
Well, Natron Brooks has been up and down for the practice squad, hasn't gotten a lot of those reps, and Richie Grant has a better understanding of what our coverages are and what we're trying to get accomplished.
But, Coach, when Natron was in there, he did a good job at making a couple of plays on some screens.
Yeah,
we
got a chance at halftime to really have some conversations with Natron Brooks, and we liked the attitude he could bring. We talked to him about a couple of the coverage we wanted to run in the second half, and he was able to step up and do that after those conversations.
Timeout.
Okay.
Can I go complete fanboy in this role play? Can I go complete fanboy?
Yeah, go ahead. Because I completely agree with what you're saying. I just think that for conversation's sake, I got to say the other side of this.
Okay, time in.
Go ahead.
Why'd you ruin Matthew Judon?
Matthew,
what did you do to
Matthew
him?
Matthew Judon ruined himself. Okay.
No, I kid.
Man.
Coach, I've noticed your linebackers are banged up, and I understand that.
Yeah.
But I don't feel like they're taking on blocks. I feel like they're trying to run around and it's creating holes in the run game.
Yeah. There's a lot of eye manipulation going on in the backfield, yeah. And our guys have to do a better job at diagnosing that at the point of attack and getting downhill quicker.
Well, coach them.
Yeah, that's the key. I'm on board, baby. Let's go.
Up next, we will get you the latest NFL headlines when we come back here on the morning shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. We are going in the huddle for the latest NFL headlines, and there are more changes for the New York Jets. According to Adam Schefter, they fired GM Joe Douglas. So first it was Coach Robert Saleh earlier in the season, and then now the GM.
Yeah, the GM that apparently didn't make some of the moves that have been made. Apparently some of those came from ownership. Like the Davante Adams, the Hassan Reddick trade apparently was from reports, you know, from leaks that some of that came from Woody Johnson. Joe Douglas, you go and look at some of the drafts and stuff. He's drafted good players. I mean, Breece Hall, good player. Sauce Gardner, a defensive rookie of the year. They got the kid on the edge from Iowa State. Good player. Like, They've put together some good players. Now they're not playing good together. And then it comes down to it, they've only got about two or three players that have performed well this year. And I don't know, you know, that to me, there's an organizational issue. There are good dudes in that organization. Like, and I mean good, like, I don't, Robert Saleh is a good defensive coach. He very much comes from the Dan Quinn kind of philosophy and how he coaches, right? And you know, some of the same slogans are the same. The way he treats players is very much the same. In fact, I when you know he got interviewed here for the job was the same when Arthur Smith was going for the job, right? They were both hired at the same year, one in New York and one in Atlanta. And I had heard through sources that one of the reasons Saleh didn't get more consideration here was because they thought he was too much like Dan Quinn. But the way he coached and the way he treated players just the organizational feel that he was bringing in. There is something fundamentally wrong is my point with that organization. And I think firing Saleh and eventually Ulbrich and then Joe Douglas, I don't think the guy that's firing everybody can fire the person that needs to be fired. Because he would have to look in the mirror to do that.
Can I ask you a piggyback question on the back end of that, just as a follow-up, because we're talking about head coaches that, you know, have been around this franchise and whatever. Does it bother either of you guys that Dan Quinn's having a good year as head coach and that Arthur Smith is having a good year as an OC? How does that make you feel?
I love the fact that Dan Quinn's having a great year. I'm a huge fan of Dan Quinn.
I know Arthur Smith as well, but I, you know, had a good rapport with Coach Quinn. Sure. So, you know, always going to kind of root for those guys.
But I mean, just as a fan perspective, you're like, it just feels like a gut punch sometimes when you look up and you see Arthur Smith succeeding with Russell Wilson.
No, I mean, well, first off, the Dan Quinn thing, I am a huge Dan Quinn fan as a coach.
And he had a good run here. He was successful as the Falcons head coach.
Sometimes things run its course. Sure. It had run its course here.
It's stale.
The Arthur Smith thing, I really, Arthur personally was never a jerk to me, was always cool to me. He would have conversations with us. He would tell us stuff. I've sat in closed door meetings with Arthur Smith that you don't talk about outside, and he was nothing but nice to me.
I think what Mike wants you to do, since you always have the pulse of the fan on the Twitters,
right,
is to put yourself in the shoes of a fan who is like, well, dang it, you know, we had this coach here, and now he's having success elsewhere.
Because I'm still fully a believer in Raheem, and I still, like, you know, his leash is very, very long at this point. It's like, okay, is this an organizational thing? You know what I mean? Like,
to answer the way Tiff put it, the Dan Quinn thing, we've covered that. He ran its course. He did well here. The thing with Arthur Smith is – no, because Arthur Smith is having an okay run. I wouldn't say great. He's gotten better.
He's okay.
They're winning
because they've got the best defense in the NFL.
I was going to say he's been okay in Pittsburgh, but he's been great with Russell Wilson, I think.
They have gotten better offensively, but they won a game
with field goals. They have twice won this season.
Twice.
With Boswell crowned him because he's that's what he does.
And crowned TJ Watt and Highsmith. And the secondary and the rest of that defense, to me, I think most Falcons fans say, yeah, Arthur Smith's doing good, but that team wouldn't be, 8-2 or 7-2 or whatever they are without Mike Tomlin and the best defense in the NFL.
I agree.
And so until they're all offensively putting up 40 points a game, I don't think Falcons fans are crying over, you know, the spilt milk of Arthur Smith or whatever
I agree. I had a friend text me on Sunday, and I was like, that's ridiculous. But he was like, I never thought I'd say this, but if I could get Dan Quinn back as a head coach and Arthur Smith as his OC, that I'd feel pretty good about it. And I was like, no. And then I was like, I don't know. I don't know. But, yeah, I mean, it's not realistic, but it's such a hindsight. But, I mean, it's just it's interesting to think about.
I also think that good coaches sometimes – and I'm not saying Dan Quinn is or Arthur Smith has become either of these things, but I think good coaches sometimes become great coaches after going through a learning experience where they are fired and they evaluate their systems.
Well, and you guys can both speak to this. Isn't a lot of this player development and what your front office is doing, drafting the right guys for the situation,
yes,
being able to develop them,
yes,
in the weight room and making sure those guys are playing at a high level and being able to, you know, get the most out of them. I think that's where some of the changes occur that you're talking about.
On to the Cowboys, where it has been a brutal season for them. So Cooper Rush is set to start in their next game, which is against the Commanders, speaking of Dan Quinn. But there might be a Trey Lance sighting in this one. And Coach McCarthy was asked about that. They weren't able to work him into the game this past week like they perhaps may have wanted to. But he did say, we have a package for Trey. We'll see what happens. So they said they've had some things ready for him, and we'll see if they can get Trey Lance sighting against the Commanders and Jaden Daniels.
And this had to happen. I mean, here's the issue. You've got Cooper Rush, who I think is a solid
quarterback. Still starting.
Right. I think he's a solid quarterback. How many times did Cooper Rush throw the ball last week? Anybody know? It was in the 50s. It was in the 50s. You already have an offensive line that has struggled big time up front, although they have big names attached to their jerseys, but they've struggled, right? And so for Cooper Rush to go in and throw the ball 50 times, something you are doing. And guys, this goes back to the exact conversation that I brought up and mic'd up on a Friday like over a month ago. You've got to change something about the way you're asking the offensive line to block and go about their business. I brought up direct snaps. But I think that's exactly what you're talking about with the Trey Lance. Just simply asking the defensive line to look at something different when you're planning on throwing it 50 times.
If he does get in, could it be a trend? Well, let's take a listen to Cowboys owner Jerry Jones.
Yeah, I don't know about that. I want to give our team the very best chance it can in all phases be successful. And so we're going to go here with a quarterback that gives us the best chance to win the game.
I think it's necessary. I don't mind it.
I don't think Trey Lance is the quarterback that gives you a best chance to win the game.
You,
that's just me. I understand
you
what you're saying.
You don't know that, though.
I'm going to tell you this. If they thought it, they would have done it by now.
You would have never thought that Malik Willis would have done what he did in Green Bay this year. There's no way you can tell me that. You also would not have thought that Justin Fields would have been able to do it.
Well, hold on a second.
The New York Giants are putting Danny DeVito back at quarterback. So,
or Tommy.
If you're in a mode to try to win games and the coach is trying to save his job, absolutely
Tim,
anything
why did
well,
you just call
possible.
That man that? Tiff?
What?
You just called him Danny DeVito.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh.
They put the penguin in at quarterback.
Tommy DeVito, my bad.
Well, I'm not.
Who I did have at Illinois for a bowl game.
I'm
really nice
with
guy. I'm sorry if you're out there listening.
Danny DeVito.
If it was Danny DeVito, he would bring the whole team sub. Jersey
might
have
trouble seeing downfield.
You know what I meant.
He might have trouble seeing downfield.
All right, let me answer one critic at a time. To the Malik Willis comment, well, the Green Bay Packers knew that, whether I did or not, because they went and traded for him. They traded for him before the season started, and they needed him literally in game two. And Matt LaFleur did a phenomenal job, and so did Malik Willis. And he gets all the flowers. Malik Willis gets all the flowers for the improvement. To Danny DeVito and Tommy DeVito, I am a little bit miffed by this move, and I'm not sure that the coach is trying to save his job. I don't think this coach thinks his job is in jeopardy. I think they're trying to get... I know this. Call me crazy because I don't believe in tanking in the NFL, but I think they're rolling out Tommy and Danny both at the same time. Maybe I don't know. That'd be a hell of a package.
He had some decent moments.
But why has Drew Locke been the number two all year?
That's what's weird to me.
Here's the other thing
that I think is underlying in both of these situations, because I think these are almost the exact same situation, right? You got a coach, you're not sure what the future looks like, and you got they're also looking at the third stringer going, hey, maybe they can help us win. I think the silver lining in both these situations is, organizationally, you can figure out who will be your backup going forward. Like, you can, if Trey Lance steps in and plays well enough, he can be your backup for Dak Prescott moving forward, right? Same thing with Tommy DeVito or Danny.
And I think it's easy to say, look, we're just having a – and none of us are wrong, and none of us are right, because we don't know. We're having a conversation, and that's the fun part about it, is like, that's just the opinion is, I don't think Trey Lance makes you better. I'm not sure why Drew Locke has been the backup all year if Tommy DeVito makes you better. But, Tiff, you're right. He played well last year, so
– we'll see what happens. This hour brought to you by Zero Res Smart, lasting clean. I am taking over.
Oh!
We're mic'd up again.
Let's go.
Which One Wednesday.
Wow.
So buckle up.
Yeah, I'm ready. I'm ready.
I wanted to use another word, but you can't say that on air. So buckle up, buttercups. That's the best.
You can use that word.
I can say that one. All right, we'll be right back here on the Morning Shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
There it is. Welcome in. It's Mic'd Up. It's Which One Wednesday. And I will cede to Tiffany here in just 1 second. Also, shout out to my guys at Buffalo's and John Foy. Getting towards the end of this football season, man. So you got to shout those out. So, look, man, I think Tiff has done a good job hosting Which One Wednesday. So told her, let's step back up to the plate, tee this thing up.
Gee,
again.
Thanks.
I hope Dylan does as good of a job judging as Tiffany does.
No, you deserve to lose again. So, anyway.
I didn't say it.
As always, I'll be fair and just, as I always am.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Can I come up with a 12th hour or 11th hour rebuttal or whatever they call it?
Listen, you can, actually.
Okay. He's the college football playoff, man. He, no matter what he does, nobody's ever going to agree with it.
Nobody overrules me, and I don't have to explain anything.
Which makes me believe, you know, I still had never finished my rat and snakes point from last week. That's another story.
You anyway. Still haven't finished it? I mean.
No. So let's get to it. All right. What's more likely to happen? Aaron Rodgers will still be the quarterback of the New York Jets next year, or Daniel Jones getting his starting QB role back this year?
Jeez. It's got to be Aaron Rodgers. It's got to be Aaron Rodgers. I don't know the zeros behind it, but Daniel Jones, that ship has sailed. There's nothing, after you've moved me from first to third, there's nothing you're going to do because there is the injury clause, I believe, in Daniel Jones's deal, if I'm not mistaken. They've essentially moved on from him and say, we don't want him to get injured because we don't want to extend him and we don't want him to be here next year. So if they're going to put him back in that role to put him at risk of that, I don't personally believe Aaron Rodgers is the quarterback of the New York Jets. I just think it's more likely than Daniel Jones getting his starting job back.
Yeah, I do. I kind of agree with most of what he said. They're going to – you get to go first. They're going to move on, I think, from Aaron Rodgers. The fact that the owner apparently wanted to bench him in week four. But the money might be the only thing that saves Aaron Rodgers there. The money there and the money with Daniel Jones is why Aaron Rodgers could be the starter and why Daniel Jones won't. Because I don't have to guess. I do my research. I know – that the Giants have an injury.
I just said
claw. You said you think.
I said I don't know how much he's owed.
What did he say? I can tell you it's 25 million. It's 25 million.
Mike, I can't confirm you did say I think
it's 26.
You don't.
Yeah, I think it's 26.
You think a lot. I know a lot.
I think it's 26.
Okay. What would be the bigger upset this weekend? Indiana over Ohio State? Or is it Army against Notre Dame? And I'm not necessarily looking at the rankings or the seedings here. I'm just, you know, factor in.
It's Army all day, every day. I mean, Army is having an historic season for them. You know, the fact that they could go beat Notre Dame, especially after what Navy would got just humiliated. Indiana is a Power Four conference school.
I knew you were going to say that. I know that they're right behind. Okay, go ahead.
They also spent quite a bit in NIL money to build this team that Kirk Cignetti has. Army, I don't think, and maybe I am wrong, but I don't think they spent millions of dollars on NIL money to bring players in just to win games. They have recruits. They are a military
service
school.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, therefore, Army beating Notre Dame and knocking them out of the playoff in a rivalry game and setting themselves up to potentially be a college football playoff team would be a bigger upset than any Power Four school could do to me.
You just said, I don't think that Army has spent millions of dollars. I know, Bo, that Army has not spent millions of dollars. However, the disrespect that has been thrown towards Indiana as an undefeated team at this point is off the charts. Ohio State, to your point, spent, what'd you say earlier? $20 million on their roster. And Indiana, it's been said, and I said it a couple days ago, and I brought up the conversation Mackenzie Brooks had with Danny Cannell. It's been said that Indiana would be underdogs to eight SEC teams. So while I think it would be incredible if Army beat Notre Dame, Notre Dame's not to the level of Ohio State. Notre Dame has no quality wins other than Texas A&M, who sits at 15.
Really?
Right? Notre Dame lost to NIU the following week.
Yeah.
All right. So while I agree with you on the surface, it'd be great for Army to win the game and get into the CFP, the upset of Indiana over Ohio State, well, what they've been able to do this year, it would be a, it would be one of the greatest upsets in the last few years.
Army's played a harder schedule than Indiana.
Moving on, there's two more
to get to.
All right, Gladiator 2 will be released this weekend with Denzel Washington in it. Will it carry the same weight and hold that same place in our cinema hearts as the first one, which was 25 or so years ago?
There's no chance. I'll go first. There's no chance. And I don't even know what the which one is in this scenario.
I was going to say, I didn't really do a which one in this case.
This is more of a fair foul.
Which one will hold that? I think this way. Let me look at what I wrote. Okay. Which one will hold a better place in our cinema hearts?
It's impossible. There we go. It's impossible. This is about to approach the levels of Dumb and Dumber and Dumb and Dumber 2. Or Dumb and Dumber-er, or whichever one you want to talk about. That's what this is about to look like. And there's a reason that, for the most part, these classics don't have the sequels, because they never live up to the hype. It's the Big Lebowski and Big Lebowski 2. And I realize it's Denzel. I love Denzel. I've done a top five. I've done a top five Denzel. All right, but there's no shot that this movie will ever even approach the shadow of what the regular Gladiator was. It's just impossible. That was a different time. There were different things being focused on. That's when cinema was cinema back then, Tiff. All right. It's just impossible.
Let's go, Bo.
Yeah, it was like 3 minutes long. It was a short. What I heard you ask me was which one will be heralded as the better sequel, Gladiator 2 or Top Gun Maverick? Hear me out. This is my argument. Because Top Gun Maverick, listen to me.
Hurry up. We got one more.
Because Top Gun Maverick is the greatest sequel in the history of sequels. That's not a trilogy. And the Gladiator 2 can never hold a candle to that, and it will never hold a candle to the original, because the original was something we hadn't seen, and this looks like a reboot of the original to me.
Okay. Last one here. Deion Sanders will be the coach of the Cowboys next year with Dak as his quarterback, or will it be his son, Shador?
Yeah.
Which one?
Hey, well, I'll go first because you went first last time, so turn your mic off there.
Yeah, go ahead. Get all your hot air out of the way so I can.
Deion Sanders won't be the coach of the Dallas Cowboys at all, because he is, if he takes an NFL job, he will be in Las Vegas with Shador, where Shador will go. Okay? But if he did go to Dallas, he would be there with Dak. Because, A, Dallas ain't going to be in position to draft Shador. And, B, they are locked in because the contract that Dak has hasn't even started yet.
Yeah. Yeah, two things here. First and foremost, I'm not ruling out that Deion's the head coach of the Dallas Cowboys next year. I'm just simply not. I think that it's... Here's the one thing that I will give Deion, all right, and I'll give Deion a lot of things, but here's the one thing I will say. Deion has done a good job, in my opinion, of raising his kids to be successful and holding their hand to an extent, but I think Deion also realizes there's a time that comes where your young men must stand on their own 2 feet, all right, and I think the time's now, and I think that it's time for Deion to grow as a coach if he wants to grow in that profession and go in that direction. Dallas is America's team. He'll have the whole spotlight and everything else he wants to talk about. And he'll look at Shador finally in Shador's life and say, you know what, young man? It's time for you to grow up and be on your own 2 feet. There's too much money involved for Dak, though, to hammer Bo's point home.
I will add, he did tell us in our meeting when I had Colorado this season that he doesn't follow his kids. So.
Yeah, his kids follow him.
His kids follow, right? But also, and that's also ruling out, if they did make him his head coach, then what if, I don't know, the Cowboys decided to make a move to get a quarterback? I don't know.
Can't imagine anybody would trade for
who won.
Well, Mikey P wanted the smoke, and guess what? He got it. He got those whopper hands put on him.
What are you gonna do, Michael P, when my whopper hands come after you?
He got his swagger back, Squid Billy, the winner of today's version of Which One Wins.
I'm trying to figure out what might have been for that.
I think really what he had to say about just. Him and Mike had a little bit of the same views, but I just like Bo's explanation and his reasoning just a little bit better.
Because I brought facts and he brought, I think, to the game.
The last answer is kind of what put him over the top, but a couple of other things in there, too.
Well, what say you? If you want to call in and weigh in on who won, which one Wednesday, you can do just that by calling us at 404-726-0929 because it is time for the wake-up call when we return. Or you can tell us, you heard us talking about the improvements or changes the Falcons defense needs to make over the bye week. You can weigh in on that too. Give us a shout. Wake up call is next on the morning shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. We are back here on the morning shift, and it is time for the wake up call. You can call us at 404-726-0929. You can weigh in on who, in fact, won which one Wednesday, Bo or Mike, you can give us your thoughts on what the Falcons need to do during the bye week to improve or make changes on their defense, because that was a topic of discussion throughout the show today.
I have a fatherly topic I wanted to bring to the table. My son learned a toddler swear word at school earlier this week. I'm getting there.
Okay.
I'm getting there. I couldn't understand what he was even saying the first, like, three times he let it out. Toddler swear word. You know what I mean? He's four, so, you know, he didn't even know what an actual swear word is. Sorry. But he was getting frustrated the other day, and you know what he did? He pulled the old Brian Kelly. Fiddlesticks! And I was like, what did you just say?
He said, fiddlesticks.
And I was like, where did you learn that? And he was like, John from school says fiddlesticks sometimes. And I was like, well, you tell little Johnny it's not nice.
And we're sitting here again.
Yeah.
So you're categorizing, because it's a replacement for the other word.
Of course.
You are
of course.
Saying fiddlesticks is a customer.
But now I'm like, man, maybe I should steal it from him. Maybe it's my replacement word.
No.
Because I can't say, you know, the actual F word around him or anything like that.
Can I, I've got to disagree with you here.
What's that?
I think it's okay for little young Ridge to show his emotion
with a swear word.
It's not a swear word. It's a very
toddler swear word.
It's a toddler swear word.
It's not. It's not. So any word said in anger is a swear word?
Pizza. Sorry, I just wanted to try.
I mean, if you keep using it, Mike's going to think.
Let me Google.
What is a fiddlestick?
Maybe it's something from the historic times.
People
used to play fiddlesticks.
Be careful.
Don't do that.
What do you mean, be careful? You know what? Get out of here. Leave right now. Leave.
Just be careful Googling stuff.
You're sick.
But I just don't. I think you're overreacting, man. I really do. Yeah, you can't. First off, you can't protect him forever. Second off, you know what I would have done? I'd have said, "Hey, son, we don't do things half-assed around here. You're gonna say the F word? You use it." No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. I think it's it's okay. He's showing anger without being violent. Or, I don't think anger. He's just showing frustration.
And that's what he's doing.
And he just says
a
word.
It's a natural human emotion.
But he's not kicking stuff or throwing stuff. He just takes his tiny bear paw, because he's already 5 foot
tiny
two.
Bear paw.
And he's like, fiddlesticks. And that's okay.
The next thing to do would be to ask him, why are you upset? So then he could vocalize the reason instead of just saying, fiddlesticks.
Well, I knew why he was upset. Couldn't get his shoe on. His old Velcro, you know, was not matching up. His light up Super Mario shoes.
Oh,
those things.
But those are so cool.
We went for a walk when it was a little bit dark last night. This man was just, he was on cloud nine. You know, I mean, just lighting up the whole street.
Dude, I won't light up shoes walking in the dark.
I bet you do. All right, let's go to the lines. We got Weems and Decatur. Good morning.
Oh, yeah, Weems. What's going on, y'all? How y'all doing?
What's up, man?
Team Tiff in the building, man. Tiff in the building. Long time, man.
No,
yeah. Don't hate.
I can't hear anything.
Eric Weems is Team Tiff. Is it this Eric Weems? The punt returner?
No, this is his cousin, man. This is his cousin.
Wait, are you guys making fun? Is someone really on the line?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, someone's really on the line.
Okay, keep going. Keep going.
I can't hear anything.
Hold on.
Oh, my goodness.
Yo.
Okay, I'm back.
Team Tiff, she can't even hear. That's crazy.
Wow.
Team Tiff, she can't even hear. We in the building, baby.
Hey, what's up?
Hilarious, man.
Yo, so look. I got two wake-up calls, man. One is for the coaching staff of the Falcons, all right? Mm-hmm. If we don't wake up, we're going to find ourselves not in the playoffs.
Oh, don't say that.
The Bucs are going to steal our position. we got a hard schedule coming up next, and we got to do something about it. And the last thing is, for Kirk Cousins, man, either you swag surf or get off the board, brother, and let Penix have it. Hey, team Tiff, baby, I'm out.
Thank you. Thank you. Almost missed my handful of fans.
here's the thing.
Appreciate
Kirk Cousins isn't going anywhere anytime soon.
He's going to have another year on this team, minimum.
Would that be a minimum of 23 more Kirk Cousins games? Unless you get to the end of next year.
No, that would be, that's right, because there's 17 now, sorry.
Yeah, so, but I agree with his first point that something's got to change, right? And it's not just getting better at what we do. There's some things strategically, schematically, offense and defense that has to change.
Well, and let's not forget that, you know, games play out differently. There's moments in every game, and the penalty, whether you think it was a penalty or not, which I thought it was very ticky-tack, the holding call on Bergeron on the very first drive, Bijan gets right to the one, I think, maybe the 1.5, that changes the game. And then that's execution, right? And then there's the execution of Drake. Drake gets a big catch. It gets you back into like the inside for another first and goal, but because he didn't execute the pre-snap stuff. So it's not just changing up what they're doing, but it's also doing it better. Like there's simple procedural things that this team is not doing that they need to get better at. And I don't know, I'm not smart enough to and have been in those situations like you have to tell you how you get better other than the simplistic thing of saying, well, you got to go practice it.
It was attention to detail. And for case in point, I know we got to get to another caller. Case in point being, and I don't know the answer to this, but what is Drake's signal to actually move towards the line of scrimmage on that? I don't know the answer because you're running away from the quarterback and you're going to be the outside end. So what is his indicator to actually start moving down the field and not do it too early? I don't know. So that's, and I know it was loud there, so it's not like he's listening to Kirk straight behind him by 20 yards. So it's just attention to detail. But I think his original point being is that something's got to change schematically. You've got to misdirect, use pulling guards, get better at your screens on offense, and you've got to start changing up your coverages, rotating in more players defensively.
Agreed.
Back to the lines we go. We have Anthony in Covington. Good morning, Anthony.
Good morning. Team Squid is in the house. Oh, how are we doing all
the... Is the-
Sir,
how are you doing this morning?
Good, sir. How are you?
I was fine until now.
I'm doing fantastic. All American. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing good, buddy.
And our resident Olympian. How are you doing, Miss Tiff?
I'm doing good, thanks.
Also, I have Mike Mafia in the back seat with me. Opie, hit me with that. Win, win, win.
Yes. Yes. Yes, that made me.
All right, so I'm going to make it quick, and I know we're running a little over. So this is actually the head of Mike's story this morning. So funny parent moment with a toddler swear word, and obviously I will substitute it for something that will not put me in Rob Tribble zone. I have three children. Two of them are special needs, so they have been verbally delayed, right? So they haven't been able to speak up to the full capacity, but that's okay. So for about 10 years, I have been cursing with reckless abandon around my house.
No.
So we have our wonderful Opie, who's in the back seat, who has come along, and we have always prayed to have a little one that can talk and have a conversation with us, and she came out and she hasn't stopped talking since. So I am watching a Georgia game, and I specifically remember that Kendall Milton is running the ball in the SEC championship, and he runs over three defenders, and my natural reaction is to yell the word "eat his butt up" and jumping off the couch.
Oh boy.
Yeah, so then Ophelia comes around the corner and just chanting three times in a row,
yes.
Eat butt, eat butt,
yes.
Eat butt.
Yes, Ophelia, yes.
I'm having to negotiate with her and tell her she cannot say that because she has to go to Christian school on Monday, and we cannot get expelled from there.
Uh-oh, sounds like McDonald's
that
came into like play a Happy Meal.
Sounds like a mafia member if I've ever heard one, man. I love it. I love that.
All I say, so, Mike, it's going to get better and better. And, Bo, once again, man, I've told you on the phone and text message, man, congratulations. Everyone's going to tell you how tough it is to be a parent, man, but I don't think enough people tell you how much fun it is being a parent, dude, and enjoy every single step of it. I love you guys. Thank you all so much. We listen to you guys every morning. Y'all have a
appreciate
you too. Appreciate it.
It's a delicate balance, my friend. I think I've done a decent job. Delicate balance it is being a parent.
I tell you what, that's something I'm probably going to improve greatly on. Is
the dreadful side of it?
Just language around the house when I'm iRacing.
This hour brought to you by Mark Spain Real Estate. Go to Mark to get a guaranteed offer on your home today and start packing. Mike, who's a lock and who's not when it comes to the college football playoffs?
Well, it's about hosting, Tiff. And I can tell you there is one SEC team that's a lock to host in my mind. It ain't Georgia. Ain't Alabama either. We'll talk about it on the other side. Sports Radio 99 Game.
We are back here on the morning shift. This hour brought to you by Mark Spain Real Estate. Go to markspain.com to get a guaranteed offer in your home today and start packing. Speaking of home and stuff, kind of like home field advantage in the college football playoffs. You see what I did?
I see what you did there, Tiff. So nice work.
Pat
nice work
on the back.
So obviously digesting the college football playoff stuff and trying to figure out who goes where. And I think the big thing for me is this started with me obviously looking at Alabama stuff because I'm a Bama guy. And the threat of Bama hosting in Tuscaloosa is non-existent. It can't happen. Mathematically, it's an impossibility for Bama to host because you look at it and they're ranked number 7 and you're like, oh, that would be so awesome. And you start looking at matchups and you go, it's impossible for Bama to host a playoff game.
Why?
Bama has to win out, right? If Bama gets another loss, they're now a 3-loss team. Now they're in danger of being completely out of the playoff. All right. If Bama wins out, they've won the SEC and they're in a top 4 seed. So they can't be in the middle of hosting a playoff game.
Why would Bama go over Ole Miss to the SEC title game if Ole Miss wins out?
Because that's already been decided. It's over opponent.
I know. I just wanted you to explain it.
Opponent win percentage, and basically the fact,
sometimes it's important to explain the things.
Well, basically the if you know the tiebreakers by now, opponent winning percentage, whether or not you win or lost to them, is a huge deal in the SEC. So the fact that Bama has not played Kentucky or Mississippi State is propping up their record over teams like Georgia and Ole Miss and Tennessee. So Bama right now is the favorite. So you've obviously got to take care of business against Oklahoma, which I'm not so sure they're going to do. I'm not sure about anything Bama's doing over the next couple of weeks, just to be very clear. I'm not saying Bama's going to win the SEC. It's a toss-up, but I'm saying they'll be favored by 2 touchdowns this weekend. They'll get Auburn at home and everything else.
That's been the beauty of the SEC this year, real quick, is that there's no real dominant team.
You have no idea.
You can say Texas is, but they're really not.
They're not the best
team they've played, they've lost to. And so the reality is that there's all these teams that are like the same. All of these teams are the same.
I kind of like it.
I'm glad you brought that up because the next part of that therein lies.
They beat LSU, I'll take it.
The next part of that therein lies is that I think there's only one SEC team that mathematically, unless chaos ensues, which it probably will, there's only one SEC team, in my opinion, that will be hosting a playoff game, and that's Ole Miss.
Well, they won't either.
See, here's how I think it pans out. When you look at the rankings and you look at the match, I thank you for just completely just crapping on my argument before
I'm just saying Florida's going to win.
right. So here's how it works out. Ole Miss, I think, is a lock to move into the 8th seed. And the reason is because you look at if all the favors hold, Ohio State beats Indiana. I don't think Indiana hosts a playoff game if they lose to Ohio State this weekend. Would that be fair to say?
I'm sorry, say that again.
Their record is undefeated, but they have no good wins.
They'll fall. Yeah, Indiana.
They'll fall back to being. I think they'll stay in the playoff, but I think they'll be on the road.
Yes.
Then Ohio State, if they were to deal with business and they get back to play. Now here's where the confusion might come in. If Ohio State plays Oregon in the Big Ten Championship and Ohio State beats Oregon, Oregon may host a playoff game.
No. Ohio State beats Oregon. Yes. There's a possibility
Oregon
of that.
Probably hosts a playoff game in that scenario.
Because I think that you won a tight game against a team during the regular season, and then if they beat you in a tight game in what is technically a postseason game, should you be punished out of hosting a game when teams that didn't even make their title game?
Right.
With a worse record, take out the strength of schedule stuff for the first part of this argument, but should you be penalized for making a championship game and another team that didn't and have to go there. And I think the committee would do that. Plus, don't forget, this committee has more than just getting the best 12 teams in. Matchups, and we're going to talk about this later on, matchups matter to this committee.
Yeah, well, they do. And there's where I want to make sure I get there. All right, so right now you've got four of the top five teams are Big Ten teams. Right, four of the top five are Big Ten teams. So Oregon, Ohio State, let's just assume they match up. Maybe Indiana jumps up and gets them. I don't know. There's a couple of scenarios where Penn State makes it in, but it's just not likely. So I think at this point, when I'm looking at it, the host teams are probably Penn State because they've got a relatively easy schedule. I don't think if Ohio State loses to Oregon, I do not think they host. But maybe somebody could have different on that. If Bama were to beat Texas, I think Texas is in the same realm as Indiana. I think Texas falls out of hosting if they were to lose an SEC championship game, as unfair as that may be.
If Ohio State loses to Oregon, they should be at the best an 11 seed.
That's my point. That's exactly my point. Because, so now all of a sudden we're watching Big Ten teams fall, and some of these, the Bama, Ole Miss, Georgia, Tennessee, start to rise. Notre Dame's going to be locked in because they're Notre Dame, and we've talked about it in the end. It's about money. They have one loss. It's to NIU. It's as ugly as possible. They could also lose to Army, which would be chaos. But my point being is that I think that Ole Miss, sitting there at 9 right now, is almost a lock to host. And if all these things I'm talking about were to hold true, how do you feel? And I know that we've already talked about this. How do you feel if it's Georgia at 9 and Ole Miss at 8 and Georgia's now traveling back to Oxford for the first round of the playoffs?
They won't do it.
You think they would avoid that on purpose and try to sandwich somebody else in there?
Yeah, what they would do is they would send Ohio State there, and they would pop Georgia down to 11 on purpose. And the reality is because people forget that the part of the committee, and don't – I know that it's a 12-team playoff now, and everyone's going to say, well, different because it was 4 then, and now it's 12. They want you to watch, guys. And a lot of people in other parts of the country might say, already seen Georgia Ole Miss play, and it was only only like a month ago.
Yeah.
And I think that they, and I also think that they want to keep conference teams away from each other in the first round.
Yeah.
I think that's a big deal. I also think you got to remember that Boise State and BYU there's flies in the ointment for some of this for the seeding.
Oh, there's no doubt. There's no doubt.
Because they can throw everything off, because if Boise loses again, they're probably like, and they lose again and then they make their conference game, they could knock down, I don't know what's left on their schedule, but it's the top four conference champions ranked by the playoff committee, and therefore BYU could jump them, and right. and Boise could be left out at that point, or the Big 12 winner could jump them, and then Boise could be left out, and Army could jump up if they beat Notre Dame. Like, there's all kinds of things going on.
Yeah, definitely.
So Garrett is here.
Real quick.
Yes.
Yeah, keep your eye on the Big 12 championship game here. So if BYU, who plays Arizona State, who's sitting down there all the way at 21, and notice who's sitting there at 20, is Tulane. Up in front of them is Army, both of them in the AAC. If those two hold serve, and this committee is telling us effectively that the Big 12 is sitting on the outside looking in, potentially.
That's
so
rough.
If Arizona State beats BYU, I mean, they may weight things a little bit differently when it's all said and done, but then you have to go play the Colorado in the conference championship game. The Big 12 may or may not be left out of this entire tournament entirely.
Yeah, I agree with you. And it's crazy to think about, but I think to your point, it's setting up for that. Tiff, UNLV's at 24.
Yeah.
That to me tells me, okay, we're propping up Boise's schedule a little bit, because you were there for that matchup when Boise played UNLV. It's always those teams 20 through 25 that I think give you insight into what the college football playoff is thinking. Case in point, I brought it up earlier. Missouri being at 23 makes no sense to me. There is no way Missouri should be at 23 right now with some of the things that have happened to that team.
And by the way, you think the committee, and I made Garrett's point, I think Monday or Tuesday, and I think he's right, but you think Colorado is still in this?
Oh, for sure.
And if Colorado wins the Big 12, they are in, without a doubt. They'll be the 12 team, and they'll be summoned to someone's campus, unless Boise loses, and then they'll put a bye. But again, You can talk about strength of schedule. You can talk about all the crap you want, but they want people to watch. And what are you going to watch?
And that's exactly why they don't televise it, like Drew Butler's been talking about.
You telling me they're not gonna put Colorado in as a Big 12 champion, knowing
the eyeballs that
good and well what Deion's gonna bring that thing. In fact, Tiff, to your point, they might if Boise was to slip up, they suddenly and Colorado won the Big 12, suddenly Colorado would just be the highest conference champion ranked, and they might deserve it. Don't get me wrong. But they would have that bye because they know it brings in viewers.
Well, real quick, and on that point, can I talk to you guys about the latest odds to win the national title after last night? And I know we got 30 seconds left, but it's we talked about four Big Ten teams being at the top and in the top five of the college football playoff, but I think the odds to win the national title tell you even more. Ohio State and Oregon are at the top, +320, +440. The next four teams, Georgia at +480. Texas +550, Bama at +800, and then Ole Miss at +1,000. That's your next six. That's your next four. That's your top six odds. Penn State after that, Notre Dame, Miami, all the way down. But I think there's a lot of insight to be taken. And I'm just telling you right now, if all things were to hold steady, I believe that Oxford is going to be a madhouse on December 20th.
I just want chaos. So that might be what's
probably going to get it. Because one of these teams is going to lose on rivalry weekend. There's no doubt.
When we come back here, we've got a Life of Squid on the way. Stay with us here on the Morning Shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Back here on the Morning Shift, and we've been talking a lot about the college football playoff rankings that were released last night. And where that now will leave some ACC teams in the mix of all of this.
And I think there's a good point to be had here, and I know that Bo was just talking about it off air. We're trying to say, a lot of people are saying that the Big 12 has a realistic chance of being left out completely, and we're not giving enough credence to what could happen in the ACC if SMU were to win out.
Yeah, I don't think – well, first, and I think SMU honestly should be probably ranked higher. But, I mean, if they beat Miami, first off, Miami's out completely. There's no way they get in unless a two-loss Miami – has no business.
No, not even close.
Being in the college football playoff.
No, I agree.
You can make an argument that SMU has played as tough of a schedule.
SMU's loss is to
BYU.
BYU,
and that was in week three, and that's a pretty good BYU team. I would say.
It's interesting too to look at this as a total body of work because it's always for the college football playoff. Colorado, case in point, it's always what have you done for me lately? Colorado has an ugly loss. They have two losses, but one of them was ugly to Nebraska, but it was like week three or week two. And
well,
it's like you look at them and go, yeah, if they win the Big 12, they're locked in.
And guess what? Indiana beat Notre Dame's. They beat them like a. I mean, Indiana beat Nebraska, like a drum.
Yeah.
Like a drum.
Yeah.
And that is Colorado's bad loss.
Man, there's so much chaos.
The thing for me is if SMU was to lose to Virginia or Cal in the next 2 weeks, I'm pretty sure Clemson will sneak in to that ACC title game then, I would think, because I think I don't know what the ACC tiebreakers are, but they didn't play each other, obviously. But Clemson could sneak in, and then you could have Clemson and Miami playing, which is what they wanted all along in the ACC title game. Because they didn't expect SMU to have a great year.
Garrett says they need Miami to lose. Clemson needs Miami to lose, and they'd be in.
Well, Miami's not losing. They play Wake. They play Wake and Syracuse, and
I said Miami's going to lose to Georgia Tech either.
I don't foresee Miami losing to either one of those teams.
Foresee is a better word. Speaking of chaos ensuing, and I want to keep going down this road, but do you guys? And I looked this up yesterday because I was having conversations about Jalen Milroe. Do you guys know who was favored at this point last year to win the Heisman? There was actually two that were in front of Jaden Daniels.
Nix was in the mix, right?
Bo Nix is one of them. Yeah, he was favored. Bo Nix was either favored this week or next week. Maybe it was next week after the end of the regular season.
Wasn't Carson Beck up there?
He was, but not at this point.
Who am I forgetting?
Very obvious.
Jaden Daniels?
He won.
Well, I mean, he won, but
other than him, there's one more. That was the. I think he was the runner-up.
At this point.
Yep.
It was
Michael Penix.
Thank you.
I don't know. I just don't pay attention. You know what sucks? I don't pay attention to the trophy anymore. I don't pay attention to the Heisman Trophy anymore because it turned.
Well, you're saying because he was just bringing the point was
because it's just like, quarterback.
It feels like Travis Hunter. It feels like his runaway train right now.
And well, I think he should be.
He should be. And
him
I agree.
Ashton Genty should be the
I
two guys.
I completely agree, but it's just crazy how we would have said the same thing about Michael Penix and Bo Nix last year, and Jaden Daniels ends up winning it.
Yeah, because he wasn't the front
in the top
runner
three at this point last
that's
year.
What I, yeah,
which is. Odd because he clearly had the best year of those guys.
And what's even crazier he didn't play in the SEC championship game
but
either.
That's why he wasn't the front runner this time. That point because those two teams were still in national title contention, which is the problem with the trophy these days. Is it's turned into an award for what is perceived best player on perceived. Best or one of the top three or four teams.
Randy Moss was being invited and Steve McNair and the guys who were the best players in college football, not the ones that were in the rankings.
It's why I am pushing so hard for Travis Hunter because there is not a
no one's doing what he's doing.
Guy played
right
130
now.
Snaps last week.
Yeah, he's the most important player, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, again, nobody's doing what he's doing. And getting to see him do that in person against what I had Colorado at Colorado State this year was, I mean.
You saw him
yeah.
and Ashton Genty up close.
Genty was hurt during our game, so we didn't get we got him, but not the full. You know, dose of him because he got hurt during the game. But still continued to play. Yeah. So,
there you go.
You know, he's got 1,900 yards right now, I believe. And Arch and I were talking about this the other day. He could break Barry Sanders' record. Now, the crappy part is Barry did it in 11 games, and he's going to play 12 right off the bat, possibly – And remember, because back then, bowl games didn't count.
But having seen both of them and both impressive players, the only reason why, you know, I would say Travis Hunter is just because it's a two-way player. Right. And not that he's just a two-way player. He's goes out and gets a touchdown pass, and he'll come back on the field and catch an interception.
That's crazy.
Like, it's
crazy. 130 you know, snaps last week.
Not that they won't, but if one of those guys doesn't win the Heisman – It'll be probably egregious as what baseball did yesterday with a Manager of the Year award. That's right. W Sauce, baby, Fire Shire. Bloody Mary mix, Key West style. And don't forget my friends at Owl and Lager. Abe and I will be out Friday at New Round Brewery. And not Friday, but Friday after Thanksgiving. So what is it, like the 28th or 9th, something like that. And then I will be at Miller's Ale House on the 30th of November.
Which one?
The one in Kennesaw. Okay. Thanks for asking. I appreciate it. Dylan's going to come. Sure Dylan's going to be there as well.
I'm going to be there.
What?
Yeah. We talked about this. We talked about this on air.
Yeah, and don't forget.
You can come with me to Buffalo's Cafe.
I was at work. I promise you, if I didn't have work, I would have come.
Also, he likes me better than you. I think he's shown that.
That's probably fair. That was showing
not
through
true.
Which one wins.
I love
don't
you
forget,
the same.
Brown Grass Charity Golf Classic is Monday, November 25th. That is what, like 4 or 5 days away, Mike? You tell me I'm bad with these things.
I don't know. Something like
five days away.
Yeah, I'm excited, though.
929 Game website, events page. You can find all the details. All right. Yesterday, the Manager of the Year awards were given out. It was yesterday, and they gave it to Stephen Vogt, who deserved it, the Cleveland manager, former Braves catcher, hell of a dude. But Pat Murphy from the Brewers won it, and the Brewers had a good year, 93-69. They finished 10 games ahead of the Cubs in the Central, yada, yada, yada.
How happy do you think the Brewers were that Craig Council leaves them and they finished 10 games ahead of the Cubs?
I think they were great, but that's BS because the guy that did more with less this year was in the playoffs was Brian Snitker, and it wasn't close. No one lost their two best players from the year previous to injury a month to 2 months into the season and was still able to do what he did. The injuries this team had, I mean, you had, three, four guys at a time that were important players that you did not have. Brian Snitker absolutely deserved it. But you know what? That's fine. Don't give it to him. But if tonight, and I think it's at 6 o'clock, if Chris Sale isn't announced a Cy Young a winner, I will riot in the streets of Atlanta.
What time is it?
I believe, let me double check, I believe it is 6 o'clock.
At 6 o'clock, we ride.
6 o'clock on the MLB Network, which I don't even have. So I will just check Twitter. But I will get my butt in the W Sauce, New Realm,
the Squidmobile.
Z71, and I will drive to Atlanta and have a one-man riot. I'll walk up and down the streets of Atlanta.
I want you to do it just so we can get video footage of that. Yeah, I just want you to.
We will wait to see that.
Right. You better be ready, Chip, because I'm stopping by your place. I'll pick you up. We'll go on. I'm just going to be.
Doors locked.
It's going to be a two-person riot.
Let's find out what's coming up on the steakhouse next here on the Morning Shift on Sports Radio 99 The Game.